This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
67 search warrants, 87 interviews, volunteer search parties at sand dunes, desert parks, abandoned golf courses, dried up lake beds in locations scattered across Southern California that most people have never heard of and would never visit on purpose. Week after week for months, in heat, in dust, in terrain that punishes your ankles and your optimism in equal measure. Hundreds of people gave up their weekends to walk grid lines across empty land looking for a woman they'd never met because her family asked them to and because the story was the kind that sticks in your chest and won't let go. And through all of it, 9 straight months between Maya Millett's disappearance and Larry Millett's arrest, Larry never joined a single search. Not once, not for a day, not to make it look like you might actually not have something to do with this. Not for an hour. The man whose wife was missing, whose children's mother had vanished, whose family was supposedly in crisis, that man never showed up to look for her. That absence tells you more than any search warrant really ever could. This episode, number 4 in our series, isn't about what happened inside the Millett house on January 7th. It's about what happened after. It's about the investigation that built a murder case without a body, the family that refused to let the case go quiet, and the arrest that bet everything on circumstantial evidence, and the custody war that dragged 3 children through years of legal limbo while the adults in their lives fought over who got to raise them in the aftermath of a tragedy nobody had been convicted of yet. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work our way through this episode. This is part 4, by the way, in the series. Be sure to, if you want to get the full darn thing, you want to get the full scope of this madness, we got it all for you here on the channel. Just look back a few episodes, the Witch Doctor murder trial of Larry Millett. We are working our way through and trying to give you a full picture of all this and a greater understanding before the trial actually takes place, supposedly later this year. Let's continue there. And again, your comments on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description of the episode. Okay, the search for Maya Millett started before law enforcement fully understood what they were looking for. Marcisse filed a missing persons report on January 9th, 2021, 2 days after Maya was last seen. That's the sister of Maya. 1 day after the family discovered the empty room Larry had claimed she was locked inside, that's when they filed it. And within days, Maya's family and friends were organizing. They weren't waiting for the police to hand them a timeline or a search grid. They built their own. They're like, we're going to go do this ourselves. Local news picked up the story almost immediately. A mother of 3, a Navy civilian employee, gone from her suburban home without a trace. The community responded. Volunteers showed up. Search parties formed. And by February, organized searches were being conducted at the Glamis Sand Dunes in Imperial County. In March, volunteers searched near Lower Otle Lake. In May, they covered areas in National City and an abandoned golf course in Chula Vista. The family hosted vigils, created social media campaigns, and pushed the story to every platform that we carried. And in April of 21, Maya's disappearance was featured on Good Morning America. Her family's attorney, her sister, and her brother-in-law appeared on Dr. Phil the same month. Dateline included Maya in a feature on missing persons across the country. In February 22, CBS's 48 Hours aired a full hour-long report on the case, hoping national exposure would generate leads. None of this was a substitute for the investigation, but it kept the pressure on. And it kept Maya's name in the public consciousness at a time when the legal machinery was grinding slowly, too slowly, for a family that already knew in their bones what had happened. Well, the family searched and advocated. The Chula Vista Police Department and multiple federal agencies, including the FBI, were building the forensic and digital case, and they were building it around Larry. In late January 21, police served a search warrant on the Millett home and impounded the black Lexus GX460. In February, Larry hired an attorney and stopped cooperating with police. That decision to lawyer up and go silent is entirely within his rights. But for a man whose wife had vanished under circumstances that screamed for transparency, The timing was noted by everyone paying attention. Also, him not showing up for the grid searches looked a little strange, too. In April of 21, information surfaced that Larry had expressed interest in hiring someone to harm the man he suspected Maya had been seeing. Maya. Yeah. Her boyfriend. When she left, he wanted him harmed, allegedly. Now, whether that constituted a credible threat or the ramblings of a man spiraling was a matter of interpretation, but it added another layer to a profile that was already deeply concerning. In May of 21, police obtained a civil gun violence restraining order against Larry and seized his entire firearms collection from his home. The basis for the order? The children in the home had reportedly expressed that they felt unsafe. When officers executed the warrant, they recovered a substantial arsenal. According to subsequent reporting, the collection included weapons that were allegedly classified as illegal assault weapons under California law. The GVRO was later discovered after Larry was arrested and held without bail, making it procedurally moot. But the seizure itself and the reason for it painted a picture of a household that was not safe. Presided over by a man who had already been identified as a person of interest in his wife's disappearance. In late July of 21, Chula Vista PD made it official. Larry Millett was named a person of interest. By that point, the investigation had been running for more than 6 months. Investigators had pulled cell tower data, vehicle mileage records, infotainment, navigation logs, email accounts, search history, social media posts, and testimony from friends, coworkers, and family members. They found the spellcaster emails. They'd found the subliminal speaker searches. They'd found the roofie queries. They'd found the deleted text. They'd found the mileage gap on the Lexus and the navigation event pointing home from an unknown location. Every thread they pulled led back to the same man telling a story he apparently didn't realize he was writing. And then on October 19th of 21, 9 months and 12 days after Maya was last seen, Larry Millett was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and possession of an assault weapon. San Diego County District Attorney Summer Stefan held a press conference. She laid out the evidence publicly for the first time, the spellcaster emails and their escalation from love to harm. Text to his boss about being ready to snap. The last spellcaster email at 4:40 p.m. on January 7th, Maya's arrival at 4:42 p.m. The banging sounds at 9:57 p.m., the phone going dark at 1:25 a.m. The Lexus repositioned, then driven for 11 hours, with Larry's phone off. The mileage gap, the navigation event at 3:29 p.m. suggesting a return trip from somewhere up to 2.5 hours away. The changing stories, the detailed requests. And then she said the thing that separated this case from most. Maya's body has not been found. She then asked the public directly for help narrowing the search radius. She gave them a 2.5 hour calculation from the infotainment data and told them that the range they were working with was that. It was an unusual moment, DA publicly acknowledging that the prosecution's case was strong enough to charge, but the physical evidence was incomplete and that civilian volunteers might hold the key to finding what law enforcement couldn't. The family had been searching for 9 months by that point. Now the DA was asking everyone else to join the team. Larry has pled not guilty on October 22nd of 2021. He was held without bail. The judge cited Larry's past threats against the man involved in Maya's alleged affair as a factor in the no bail decision. Larry's been in custody continuously since that day, a span of over 4 years, as of this recording, without a trial. But the arrest, as significant as it was, did not resolve the other crisis unfolding in the background. What would happen to Maya and Larry's three children? Well, when Larry was arrested, the kids were living in the same Chula Vista home where their mother had disappeared. Larry's parents, Benito and Judith Millett, were providing care. Maurice's, my sister, filed a petition for guardianship in November of 2021, just weeks after the arrest. She wanted custody of her sister's children. Larry's parents opposed. Larry himself from jail filed paperwork nominating his parents as guardians because, God, he knows how to make good judgment calls. And what followed was not a swift resolution in the best interest of three children who had already lost their mother. What followed was years of legal combat that exposed just how broken the system can be when it's asked to protect kids caught between two families with fundamentally different understandings of what happened and who deserve trust. A probate judge ordered weekly visitation between Maya's family and the children in November of 21, but visitation and custody are different things, and the guardianship question dragged. It had to wait for Larry's competency determination in the criminal case. It had to wait for depositions that Larry's parents' attorneys delayed. It had to wait through scheduling conflicts and legal procedural hurdles that seemed to multiply every time the case approached resolution. Meanwhile, the children were living in a home where their maternal family's access was limited and, according to later testimony, actively undermined. The court-appointed guardian ad litem, an attorney assigned to represent the children's interests, later told the judge that Larry's parents had not supported the children attending therapy. Judith Millett was found to have texted the oldest daughter during visitation days with Maurice's, telling her to lock the doors when Richard is around. Richard being Maurice's husband. A note was discovered in one of the children's bedrooms with instructions on how to get out of visitation to the Maya's family. The paternal grandparents, according to testimony, were not just resisting the transfer of custody. They were coaching the children to resist their own aunt. I wonder where Larry got his personality from. The guardianship trial finally happened in early August of 24, nearly 3 years after Maurice's first file. That's how efficiently our system works. So much we give a shit about children in our country. Both sides presented their case. The guardian ad litem recommended Maurice's. She noted that the children had told her they wanted to stay with their grandparents, but she concluded that the grandparents had created an environment that was actively harmful to the children's emotional development and their connection to their mother's family. Benito Millett testified that if the Chula Vista house went into foreclosure, which it was on track to do since mortgage payments had stopped, he planned to move the children into a neighbor's house. The judge's response was pointed. If you're sponging off the neighbor's goodwill, how can you say that is stable? Judge Ronald Frazier issued his ruling on August 12th of 24. Custody went to Maurice's. The children were ordered to move to her home in Riverside County by August 18th. The judge told Larry's parents directly on the record, "You have failed your grandchildren emotionally by not supporting their therapy and visitation. It was the first legal proceeding connected to Maya's disappearance to reach a definitive resolution more than 3.5 years after she vanished." The children, by then ages 14, 13, and 7, or 8, depending on the source, moved from Monroe Valley to live with their mom's family, her sister, and her husband, Richard. The transition wasn't easy. These are kids who lost their mother, live for years with the paternal grandparents who were actively undermining their connection to their mother's family. So imagine the brainwashing that goes on in that sort of a period of time, allegedly, in my opinion. And we're now being uprooted again to a new home in a new city. But her sister reported in January 25 that the children were beginning to open up. She described small, unprompted gestures of affection, including the oldest daughter hugging Richard for the first time in nearly 4 years. That detail, one hug after 4 years, tells you everything about the damage that was done in the gap between Maya's disappearance and the court's decision to act. There's a version of the story where the system works the way it should, where a woman disappears under suspicious circumstances. Law enforcement investigates. The suspect is arrested. The children are placed with the family member who filed for custody within weeks, and the trial happens within a year. That version doesn't exist. What exists is a 9-month wait for an arrest, a 3-year custody battle, children left in the care of grandparents who undermine their therapy and their visitation, all while the system's being warned about this and ignoring it, and a criminal trial that, as of this recording, still hasn't started, over 5 years after Maya was last seen. The investigation was thorough, the arrest was justified, the family's persistence was extraordinary, but the machinery around all of it, the courts, the procedural delays, the guardrails designed to protect due process that can also be used to delay accountability, ground everything to a pace that bears no relationship to the urgency of what happened. Maya's family searched every weekend for months. They showed up in court every time there was a hearing. They raised awareness on every platform available to them. They fought for custody for years. They did everything a family could possibly do. Larry, from jail, nominated his parents for custody. His parents fought to keep the children in a house that was going into foreclosure. His aunt smuggled letters from the children into his jail cell in violation of a protective order. And for years, the system let it all happen. Slowly, procedurally, one hearing at a time, while 3 kids grew up without their mother and without a clear answer about what happened to her. That's the story here in episode 4. Not a single dramatic event, but a long accumulation of effort, failure, persistence, and incremental progress. 67 search warrants, didn't find Maya's body, 87 interviews, didn't produce a confession, hundreds of volunteer searches, didn't locate remains, but the investigation built a case. The family kept the pressure on, the DA charged murder without a body. And a probate judge, after years of delay, looked at what Larry's parents were doing to 3 children and said, enough. None of it brought Maya home. But it moved her children closer to the family she would have wanted them to be with. And it moved Larry Millette one step closer to the courtroom where eventually a jury will hear everything he did and everything he didn't do in the months before and after his wife disappeared, including the fact that he never once showed up to look for her. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. One more piece in this series. We're going to get to it. I know. Truth is crazier than fiction sometimes, isn't it? Looking forward to your feedback. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever it is. Hit subscribe before you forget. And like I said, love to get your thoughts in the comment section on our Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Until then, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.